you very much, Cal, and thanks very much, especially for inviting me to talk here. I actually haven't talked very much about the work on sorghum, which has been going on for the last 10 to almost 12 years. And I just want to make sure here that you understand that I'm here as a representative of actually a fairly large group of people who's been working together. Some of them are listed by name, but many others are only listed as part of their institutions. And I really would like to make sure you know what kind of organizations are working together. The first four on this list here are all farmer organizations working in different parts of Mali and Burkina Faso. And then the next two are national research programs in Mali and in Burkina Faso. And then again, we have two farm organizations. So you see that our approach of working together relies very much on farmers who are well organized, similar to what Julie presented for the French case. And then we have a bunch of donors, so that's of course essential. I want to talk a little bit about the context where we work. Sorghum is in West Africa, actually has a secondary center of diversity. Sorghum improvement in West Africa has some history, but very little adoption, which was one of the main reasons to look at approaches and see which approaches can achieve what. And of course, West Africa is one of the regions in the world where land at the moment is not the limiting factor for increasing production. We are in a situation where when I worked into the first village and did my first discussion about cropping systems, I almost fell off the chair when the farmer answered, "Well, we don't have a problem of land." And I came from India, so I thought this was paradise. But it is changing, and intensification of sorghum production is actually happening. And one of the main reasons is increased population density and thus reduced fallow periods. Traditional cash crops like cotton are actually decreasing in importance for a variety of reasons. Cereal prices are high, so farmers are seeing opportunities for cereal marketing and that way for also buying inputs for cereals. Another important factor is the organizations that farmers are creating that help with marketing but also help with accessing knowledge and other skills. And we are working in actually a high rainfall zone. Not all of West Africa is Sahel only. We are working in an area between 800 to 1,000, 1,200 millimeters of rainfall. So it's not Syria. But of course, fertilizer prices are high. Fertilizer availability is very poor. Marketing networks are hardly, basically don't exist. And thus, a lot of factors are in place that are more closer to Mauritius market failures. Just to give you one image on the diversity of cropping situations in West Africa. And, well, where is my cursor? I have the mouse, but there's no cursor. Anyway, the area that we are working in is pretty much this yellow, my main target area. Oh, there it is. Okay. So we are targeting this light yellow band primarily. Our research station is close to Bamako in Mali. This is the country of Mali here, so you can see how it extends from almost no rainfall down to 1,500 millimeters. And these bands cut across all of West Africa. So each one country has huge diversity in rainfall conditions, and one thing is necessary is to target specific conditions, because as you can see, this is actually a map of length of growing period, and the lengths vary from tremendously. So crops need, varieties need to be adapted to that. So what options do we have for improving sorghum productivity in a center of diversity like here in West Africa? And I'm looking here first at the options for germplasm. If we're looking at using local germplasm, which are the predominant varieties being used presently by farmers, and they of course have all the preferred quality traits as well as for different uses as well as for different processing options. They are adapted to the predominant abiotic stresses like soil acidity, rainfall pattern, and low P availability. Similarly, they're tolerant to the prevailing biotic stresses. And one main trait that facilitates all this adaptation is actually photoperiod sensitivity. These varieties, local varieties, are largely photoperiod sensitive, which means they flower at a specific calendar date independent of their sowing date, which is important in these high rainfall areas. Introduced germplasm rarely has this. It's one key problem. But introduced germplasm may have a higher grain yield potential, and it has diversity for height, and of course some genetic traits that are useful for breeding, like male sterility, either in a CMS system or genetic male sterility. And going along with the reduced height, we can have improved stover quality, which in the traditional locally used material is actually very poor. Looking at different variety types, different options, we've chosen to actually work on both options. And we're creating new open pollinated varieties of sorghum. And in our case, sorghum is actually not as much an inbreeding crop as it is in with the germplasm that's used in many other countries. We get about 25% of outcrossing, so it's an intermediate kind of situation. We have built broad-based populations based on West African landraces and actually tried to compile populations that combine different kinds of landraces, not within a landrace type. We're using genic male sterility to do this. So we have crossed with introduced touring germplasm and back crossed two times. We have a strong focus on material with reduced plant height, which you will see in a moment, and put initial focus on random mating to get enough new recombinations in our material, and later on only selection with on yield, in a two, which we are using a two-stage procedure of S1, S2 lines, which can help us to combine creating new OPVs at the same time as creating identifying material for a new random mating box. Variety testing is all done within a specific target zone. We have also, at the same time, created hybrids based on local germplasm, which meant that we had to identify locally adapted R and B lines, and that way breed new AB pairs. We have identified heterotic groups within those materials in the local germplasm and are at the moment working on seed production capacity, and I'll show some data in a minute. I want to summarize the contributions of farmers to these processes just by this one slide. Luckily, a lot of my predecessors have already shown a lot about this, so I don't need to define things in as much detail. In our case, farmers have contributed very much to the identification of preferred traits and target conditions, which is something I think hasn't been talked about very much, but target conditions in any one area are not at all uniform. For example, in our case, it could be that farmers need a variety for early sowing or another variety for late sowing, and this can be two or more months of difference in their sowing dates. Or they can be for higher fertility fields and lower fertility fields, or fields that are infested with striga versus other kinds of fields. So the target conditions are a very key element in deciding what to do where. And farmers are very much involved in this kind of targeting. We've involved farmers in single plant selections, very similar to what was discussed for the maize case. But farmers are heavily involved in yield testing of experimental varieties because grain yield is the key trait we want to improve. And this has been done, been going on in trials that are more researcher managed or co-managed, and followed up by trials where farmers have chosen the best entries from those larger 30 entry trials to test 3 to 4 varieties under their own management completely. And we are working with them on marketing seed at the moment. Similarly, for the hybrids, a lot of the lines that have come out of the OPV breeding program have gone into the hybrid testing program. So farmer-selected lines and also land raisers have been used or are being used as hybrid parents. And the same evaluation procedures that we developed for varieties are now being used for hybrids. Just to give you some idea about the height differences that we're talking about, traditional sorghum varieties, is like the one on the right, they grow 4 or 5 meters tall. And these are the preferred variety types. As you can see, this was actually, you can see all the ribbons, I think, on the stem of the one. Farmers, during a field visit, were given some ribbons to tag plants that they like. And this one they liked very much. But we are working very much on the reduced height for a number of reasons, and one you will see in a minute is that we can actually increase grain yield higher on the shorter ones. But a lot of farmers who are experimenting with the shorter plant types are realizing that they also improve, they always have improved stover quality, which is becoming a very important trait in these intensifying systems. Just as a summary of the result on yield performance of these different types of materials, this is 1 year data from trials conducted in a total of 7 villages, 4 in this area called Dioila and 3 in the Mande area. There were 16 tall entries and 16 short height entries in separate trials, but evaluated in the same villages, but not in the same by the same farmers. But each farmer who grew a trial had 2 replications, so we can calculate errors and things like that. So what this slide shows you is actually not yield figures as such. The mean yields of those trials were around, the overall mean was around 1.5 tons, so we had quite a few that were over 2 tons, but some that were around 1 ton. What this slide shows is the percent of superiority of the test entries over one common Czech variety in all the trials, which is actually the variety that was in the picture on the right with all the ribbons, so a very much preferred local type variety. What you can see here among the tall entry trial is that we can show superiority of the hybrids in general over the Czech, and these are tall hybrids, and the best hybrid is giving us about a 20% advantage in both areas. For the open pollinated varieties in general, we don't get an overall mean, we don't get an advantage, but the best varieties is about half as good as the best hybrid. If we look at the short statured material, you can see that all those columns go up, and this is indication, and we have other data, of course, as well, that with the shorter stems, we can just support larger panicles. What happens is with the tall material, they just collapse under heavier panicles. I want to show you now some data about diversity and what's happening with these varieties after several years of working in the same villages. And we just had a student who finished some surveys in one of these areas. This is all from this Mande area, where we've been working for since last 10 years. And she has chosen 3 villages to look more detailed at use of different varieties. And in this picture now, you see just the number of varieties grown per village. Between 2004 and 2000, actually the season was 2009, the observations were taken in 2010. So you can see that in all villages the number of varieties grown has actually gone up, and in some cases very much so. This is a picture showing the individual columns are individual varieties, and the two colors of the columns are the 2004 data and the 2010 data. I don't want, there's no need to read the individual variety names, but I think what is clear is that the dark columns, you see a lot more dark columns than light columns, which are all the new varieties that have come into, in this case, the two villages. There's very few white columns where you don't have a black one next to it. Those are the ones that have disappeared, at least in this survey. They may still be in the village, but maybe in some other households. We only interviewed 20 households per village here. What you also see is that in some, there's always two, three varieties that make up the bulk of the sorghum grown in any one village. They're not the same ones in different villages, and they may have changed in this period of 5 years or 6 years. Now we're looking at changes on household level. The way we're plotting it in this case is the S stands for short or early maturing varieties, M for medium maturing variety, late, L for late maturing variety, and then combinations. SML would be a family who grows early, medium, and a late maturing variety versus another, the next one is a short and early and medium, early and late, and so forth. And the top is the combinations that the families grew in 2004. And at the bottom, you see what those same families are growing 6 years later. What I want to show you with this slide is that there's in this whole set of three villages, there's one family who grows the same type of variety in 2004 as in 2010. This is an enormous dynamic of varietal change in an area where that is generally being seen as very traditional and people think there's no change at all. If you look in this detailed manner, there's a complete 100% change of sorghum varieties being grown by any individual family in these villages. They may change to varieties that were already available in the village, but each family is changing very, very much. And this is just outlook for the future. This is a small seed storage facility that one of the farmer organizations actually managed to get from another donor to market the varieties that they have created in this collaboration. Thanks very much.
Question, there's one in the back.
So for your open pollinated varieties, 25% is pretty high for outcrossing. Is there selection to either maintain, decrease, or increase that?
To increase the outcrossing rate?
Well, it's an open pollinated variety, yeah.
It's just that in this, the local varieties in this area are mostly of the Guinea race, and so Guinea race sorghums have usually not been included in these studies on outcrossing rates. So it's just, we haven't changed anything specifically. It's just in this race they seem to be higher. So there's ideas about trying to change this even more, but we haven't started it.
I have a question. When the farmers change varieties from year to year, are the variety they've taken on, is it similar to what they had before, or is it totally different, or is it?
Well, in terms of plant type, it's usually not very different. They're mostly of the same traditional tall plant type, but they have what the trait that we looked at was the maturity period. So it's actually quite a significant change. They changed often from medium maturity to some later maturity, or from medium maturity to early and late, so that they actually have increased the diversity of the material that they grow themselves for that trait.
And, and the reasons for those changes?
The reason for those changes are mostly to cope with the diversity of growing conditions that they face, and I think the reason for changes is also that they have more varieties available now to choose from because they have been involved in this experimentation.